God bless you. It's very good to be with you. I count it a privilege to be with such a group as you. And greetings from Virginia Beach. What's a magnetism that draws such a group as you together? What's the glue that pulls us together, holds us together? Such a trickling and smattering of people from so many varied backgrounds, and just diverse backgrounds. What is it that pulls us together? Some of you have overextended yourselves out of your own comfort zones. You've traveled out of your valley to come to this place. Some of you have left your country. Some of you have left the plains and you've come to the hills for this occasion. And I suppose that some of you had to fill your vehicles up with gas on the way here, and some of you probably had to fill it up more than once. And I'm guessing that some of you probably had to foot your own bill. Your school board's not even doing that for you. That's just my guess. I know that some of you braved the elements of shyness and self-consciousness and the fear of meeting new people that you haven't met before. You don't know what they think of you, which doesn't really matter anyhow. Well, why were you willing to do that? What's the drawing power in an occasion such as this? Well, there are seminars that help people who are hurt. There are seminars that help people who can't handle the curves that life brings to them. And there's a place for those. There's a place for helping people who can't handle the unfairness that life brings to them. This group of people, what brings us together, is before that. I'm not saying we're more important than that, but I am saying that it comes before that. The drawing power here is your interest in children. It's your interest in young people. It's your interest in passing on, transmitting truth, and being involved in Christian education, a very worthwhile endeavor. We're interested in developing the character in people that allows them to handle the unfairness that life will bring. We're interested in developing, growing people that actually are productive, good citizens of our land. We're interested in developing people that honor God, that have the fear of God as the beginning of all their wisdom and understanding. Your love for your students motivates you. It moves you to do all you can to help them. And I'm supposing that you're here today to do what you can to better your teaching abilities, to better your vision, to broaden your vision, and to improve your teaching. So God bless you in that endeavor. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 1. Says this. I know it might be pulling it just a little out of context, but it's okay. I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, Paul writing, beseech you that ye walk worthy of the vocation wherewith ye are called. The next verse leads right into the subject for this morning. Next verse says, with all lowliness and meekness, with longsuffering, forbearing one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body, and it goes on. Building and maintaining relationships. We deal with a lot of relationships in life. So much of our life is made up of relationships. And in fact, it's quite the life with no relationships. We really don't experience that. Every now and then we get lonely, a sense of loneliness. And it causes us to realize how life would be without relationships, without meaningful relationships. So this morning I'd like to just talk about six different words, six different attitudes, six different characteristics of what it takes to build and to maintain good relationships. First, let me read from Mere Christianity just a little bit. Not that I support everything in Mere Christianity, but I think C.S. Lewis has a good point here. He's talking about our life as Christians being as a fleet of ships. Three things are very important. We have a goal, we have a seaworthy vessel, and we have a proper relationship with other ships. We're sailing. He uses the metaphor of sailing in a fleet of ships. Let me read. There are two ways in which the human machine goes wrong. One is when human individuals drift apart from one another, or else collide with one another and do one another damage. The other is when things go wrong inside the individual, when the different parts of him, his different faculties and desires and so on, either drift apart or interfere with one another. You can get the idea plain if you think of us as a fleet of ships sailing in formation. The voyage will be a success only, in the first place, if the ships do not collide and get into one another's way. And secondly, if each ship is seaworthy and has her engines in good order. As a matter of fact, you cannot have either of these two things without the other. If the ships keep on having collisions, they will not remain seaworthy very long. On the other hand, if their steering gears are out of order, they will not be able to avoid collisions. He changes the metaphor. Or if you like, think of humanity as a band playing a tune. To get good results, you need two things. Each player's individual instrument must be in tune, and also each must come in at the right moment so as to combine with all the others. The two metaphors that C.S. Lewis uses to describe these relationships in life. There are four main relationships in a school setting. The teacher with the administration. I assumed that I was speaking primarily to teachers since this is Teachers Week. The teachers with administration, teachers with fellow teachers, teachers with the parents of the students, and also the teachers with the students. In the 35 minutes of my allotted time, I really can't get real specific and exhaustive on any of these. Nonetheless, let's look at some characteristics that pertain to all. One thing that's very important, one of the first steps of a relationship, is a proper recognition. That's the word, recognition. A proper recognition of others. What I mean by recognition is this, in a very small way. You greet somebody by name. Who are you? Oh, this is your name. You're not a hey you, you're not a kid, you're not just a child, you're not just a group, but you are an individual. Thus you speak to your classroom. You take the time not just to speak to the whole classroom, but to speak to each one as an individual. Recognize the individual person in each one. I know that we are living in a day when individualism is growing and mounting. I'm not supporting that, but I'm talking about you recognizing the value of a complete person, though he's small, only a first grader, or though he is rowdy ninth grader, he is a person, and sometimes he wants that recognition. That may even be why he acts the way that he does. He wants you to call him by name. So call your students by name. Look people in the eye. That's showing them you recognize them as a person. The parents. Let's recognize who parents are. I think sometimes in our zeal as Christian school teachers, we go to these meetings and I'm kind of like Paul here when he says, I want to say this, I'm just speaking on my own, I'm not speaking of the Lord. Allow me to just do this a little bit. We have a tendency of thinking we know how things ought to be done. We have a tendency of thinking that the parents are actually there for our support. We fail to remember that really the parents came first. We are there because of the parents, not the parents there because of us. The school is not there because of you. The school is not there so that you have a place to fulfill your ministry. But you're there as a servant to the parents. God has given parents the primary responsibility of teaching and training their children. And I think it's very important that we keep that in focus. What I'm saying is this. Sometimes we think that, you know, parents really, that they're not doing a good job supporting the school. They're not, I can't get my students to work unless the parents enforce homework on them. All that is true, but let's remember at the same time that we actually are there, we as teachers are there because of parents. We are parents' helpers. Parents are not teachers' helpers. There is another aspect also of the church calling you through the school board to minister in that position, and that also is an aspect of it. You are also working for the church. You're not just working for the parents. The board. Building a relationship with the board. I heard, excuse me, school board members, if you're here, I'm sure it's not you, because board members that fit this category don't go to Faith Builders for Teachers Week. But I've heard in teachers' meetings, school boards referred to as head nodding, rubber stamping seat fillers. I don't know if you have any school board members like that. Sometime probably you have. And I felt like my school board was at fault already. And I shared around with this idea. How can I get my school board more involved? My school board, you see, I'm okay. And I so appreciated what some people have told me. I remember that Pete Witt told me, I was asking him just some private advice. He said, you as a principal, you as a teacher have got to get the school board involved. You communicate with them. You ask them all kinds of questions that you already know the answers to. You ask them anyhow. At first, they just, yeah, everything. But after a while, they'll start thinking. You're actually shifting the responsibility that you were assuming, which is theirs, back into their lap. So communicate with your school board. Recognize your school board. Recognize who they are. Recognize their position. And don't try to fill in where they lack. Now, you probably have some good, active, proactive school board members also. School administration, respect them. Recognize who they are. Recognize what they're doing. Appreciate that. Number two, the first point was recognition. Second point, respect. I saw in writing a while back, I don't remember where, that basically the sum total of human relationships could be summed up in the word respect. If we would have respect in every facet of human relationships, things would go along very well. And there's a lot of truth to that. Respect each other's personality. I'm speaking to your students, I'm talking school board members, I'm talking everybody. Respect the fact that they are different from you. It's not just that they are different from you, it's also that you, in fact, are different from them. I heard
somebody from Georgia where I grew up say, he said that down here in Georgia is the only place that we talk right. Everybody from everywhere else got an accent. It's not like that. I'm different from you. You're different from me. You're different from your fellow teachers. They're different from you. Respect the differences. Respect who somebody is. In fact, when you really respect who somebody is, you're viewing them as a person, you're honoring them. Respect the administration's position. Respect their wishes. Respect their goals, their vision. And you may say, well, mine doesn't even have a vision. Respect them anyhow. Ask them questions to make them develop a vision. Teachers, respect each other. Don't play that favorite teacher's game. Don't teach with the view that when my students leave school and they are asked, who is your favorite teacher, it's going to be me. Don't teach with that in mind. I mean, not even subconsciously. Teach because you're a teacher. Teach truth, not yourself. You as fellow teachers can learn from each other. You can learn so much. There's a wealth of information. You long-term teachers, you can provide a stability, but the fact of the matter is we long-term teachers tend to get in grooves or ruts, and we just tend to do things over and over the same way year after year. Sometimes there are some new teachers that run off to Faith Builders and they come back with some just brimming with ideas. New teachers can infuse new life and a variety. You can provide a stability, older teachers, younger teachers, new teachers. You also provide a creativity and a newness, a freshness to the whole education experience. Respecting parents. Respect the parents for who they are. Respect the parents that they who are the parents of your students. Sometimes it's difficult because you at school may maintain a higher standard than some of your parents do. I've heard comments from some of my students already, like, I can say shoot at home. My dad and mom don't care. In fact, my dad says it too. And another young lady told me something like, I can't get you to do what I want you to do like I can my mom. You're going to maintain, hopefully, a higher standard than some of the parents that send their children to your school. Just because that's the way that's the way communities are. I caution you, however, to be very careful that you do not foster the ground for your students disrespecting their parents with your higher standard. Don't hold to a higher standard and thereby give your students reason. Don't hold to a higher standard in a way that will give your students any reason to disrespect their lower standard holding parents. It's important. They are still parents, even if they hold to a lower standard than you do. You can, however, make a difference. This may happen at home. That's up to your dad and mom. I'm not involved in that. But here at school, this is the standard. We're going to maintain this at school.
Be careful that you don't give a put your parents in a negative light with their own students, even if they hold to a subpar standard. Respect your students. Actually, I have a real question. I've struggled with this thing. I'll tell you the two extremes. My school teacher, 7th and 8th grade teacher, she had a hawk eye on whisperers, and she allowed no whispering. Well, some young man who is now a preacher, who he thought, I'm going to let her bite on this one. He came up to another young man who is now a preacher, doesn't really matter, and he whispered into his ear, he said, "None of your business." And the teacher said, "Milton, what'd you say? None of your business." And he walked out. That's the one extreme. The other extreme is something that I face sometimes when my high school students that seem to be coming kind of worldly wise, they studied their constitution and I ask them a question and they say something like, "I plead the fifth. I request the right to remain silent." We need to respect students' privacy, but somewhere between those two extremes, we need to also develop their respect so that they know that you have a full and worthy right to know what's going on in school. So that they understand that what they bring to school is in fact subject to the teacher's approval. Not that you're going to pat down their pockets every day, but they need to understand that what they bring to school is subject to your approval. I would suggest that they understand that ahead of time, before the situation comes up. But let them understand that you have a right to know what's going on in any of their possessions and in their conversations. What were y'all doing back there? Don't be nosy, but be interested, be involved. But at the same time, respect your students. Respect their privacy, respect their person. Teachers, live a life that's worthy of respect. You live a life that's worthy of respect. I know that you can't demand respect, and that respect comes from the heart of a student. You can earn that respect. At the same time, there should be a structure in place in your school that respect is expected for the teachers. Respect your students by admitting you're wrong in the event you are. They don't expect you to be perfect, but they do expect you to admit your mistakes if and when you do make them. Number three, communication. I'm going to go straight to a diagram that I found very helpful, actually from Stephen Covey in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Trust and cooperation are very important in this whole matter of communication. If there is low trust and low cooperation, that's basically the relationship between a contractor and his clients. So they write a contract to protect themselves so that each one is protected. They write a contract, you know, using these legal terms. They refer to they go not on trust of each other, but what's legal. It's basically that relationship. And it can be done in smaller ways with with people. Now, if there is a high level of cooperation and a low level of trust, I'll tell you what that's like. That's like traveling to Faith Builders and you're with a group of people that you don't know real well, and it's 12 o'clock and the driver asks, well, where do y'all want to eat? And you know the scenario. It just goes around. Nobody has any opinions whatsoever. They probably do, but they're scared to give them because they don't, they're totally cooperative with wherever the driver pulls in. No trust to say, I'd like to eat here. I don't know you good enough. I don't know that you're going to appreciate my opinion. If however, we get into a relationship like that at school, we have a high level of cooperation, but we really don't trust the whoever we're working with, we end up being, we cooperate almost unthinkingly. We just do what we're told to do without even asking any questions. We just cooperate, and we actually cooperate, and we almost stay, we try to stay detached from it. It's the idea of, I don't know anything, I just work here. It's that idea. I was told to do, and I'm really not responsible. Somebody ends up with the mentality that I'm a slave, I'm a martyr, with this high cooperation and low trust. If we move to a high trust and a low cooperation, then's when we pretend we talk good to the people that are talking to us. We agree with them. And we really don't feel that way, but we don't let them know that we do. We pretend to be on their side. We talk to the other side. We pretend to be on that side too. We're double-faced. By the way, Abraham Lincoln, when he was accused once of being double-faced, he said, me, double-faced? I promise, if I had another one, I wouldn't use the one I am. We should move and we should work toward a high trust and a high cooperation. Let me tell you what this is like. This high trust and high cooperation. I am willing to trust you with my opinions. I'm willing actually to speak. I'm willing to share my heart with you. I'm willing to allow you to evaluate my opinions. I'm willing to bear my heart to you. I'm willing also to offer some opinions and some input on your ideas. I'm open to you. We're not scared of each other. If I give my opinion on an issue and I don't know and I don't trust the person, I need to be careful what I'm going to say because he might get the wrong idea about me, humanly speaking. Well, if we have a high level of trust for each other and a high level of cooperation, we enter into a relationship, into occasions, into situations, with the understanding that I'm going to be willing to share my heart with you. I'm going to be willing to accept your heart being shared with me. I'm entering into this thing. I do not think I've got to have my way. My way is subject to discussion. My way, my opinion can be shelved for some greater, some better idea. The word is communication. Communicate with each other trustingly and cooperatively. Also borrowing from Stephen Covey, he makes a statement concerning the next word, understanding. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. We get into situations with people, and we need to prove our point. We need to let somebody know where we're coming from, and that becomes very important to us. Seek first to understand the other person, and then to be understood. We turn that thing around so often. I've been in conversations already. I know how it feels to be on the other end of the scope. I've been in conversations, and somebody was trying to prove his point,
And I'll admit, I was trying to prove mine too. And I thought I recognized his opinion, but he never gave me one inkling that what I said would hold an ounce of water. He didn't recognize, he didn't even seem to try to understand what I was saying. On the other hand, not long ago, I was in a situation, actually I was sitting under a sermon, and somebody was speaking. I married a Mennonite lady, and we're this merging of a Amish background and Mennonite background, and it's broadening both of our worlds. But we were in a situation, and I felt like there's nobody around here that understands exactly how it is. Until a preacher was preaching, and he obviously understood exactly what it was, and it just warmed me. It did something to me in knowing that somebody understood me. I'm telling you, seek first to understand, then to be understood. Try to present your points in a way which can be understood. If a salesman can't sell something, it's probably not the buyer's fault. We need to send the salesman back to school. So, seek first to understand, then to be understood. Understand where people are coming from. Understand people's background. Understand who they are and why they think the way that they think. That frees us to love them. That frees us to work with them much better. Then there is another word, the fifth word, synergy. I think it's a very important word. It has to do with teamwork. Synergy is actually the definition of that is the idea of the whole is greater than the sum of all the parts. How can that be? That doesn't line up with math saying 1 + 1 + 1 is, you know, the fixed laws that God has shown to us in mathematics. But synergy, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. You and your Christian school working together can do a better job than all of you individually doing it and then adding it all together. Because the relationship is actually a part itself. So we have to throw in that relationship variable. 1 + 1 plus the relationship of them all may equal 8. That's not new math either. That's synergy. The relationship of these different parts working together creates a bigger, fuller, better picture than any of you could do by yourself. That's what the gifts are all about, the gifts of the Spirit. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 11 through 16 talks about the gifts of the Spirit. They're given for the, let me read. Ephesians chapter 4. And he gave some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and some pastors and teachers for the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ. It's talking about a building up. If you look down through here, as these gifts synergize, as they work together, building together, we see, if you'd look at this, you would actually see growth. You'd see maturity. You would see service. You would see stability, that we'd be no more tossed to and fro. We see growth, maturity, service, and stability in this whole thing when these gifts of the Spirit synergize. You can synergize your gifts of the Spirit. You can synergize your natural abilities, your likes. I remember the first teacher I taught with. Well, he was a driver. He was a tough one. Sometimes I would cringe when he'd scold the students, and I'd almost think like he's scolding me too. I'd just kind of like shrivel up almost. And well, it took some time. Time, by the way, is the last point, and we're just about out of it.
It took some time for us to be together in this relationship before he really started using and utilizing my strong points. And it also took some time for me to recognize that this fella has got some good points. And he is providing for me something that I need. It took time for that. By the end of 2 years working together, we were working as a good team. It does take time. Robert Frost says, a little poem, "When a friend calls to me from the road and slows his horse to a meaning walk," seems like horses often enter into Robert Frost's poems, "I don't stand still and look around on the hills I haven't hoed and shout from where I am, 'What is it?' No, not as there is a time to talk. I thrust my hoe in the mellow ground, blade end up, and 5 feet tall, and plod. I go to the stone wall for a friendly visit." In other words, he's saying, I stop my work, and I go for a friendly visit. Maybe not needless chit-chat, but certainly we need to interact with each other. We need to take time for each other. We can't be on the same team and expect to pull together without some interaction with each other. We can't expect, I'm just going to pull my share of the load by myself, and I expect everybody else to do the same thing. We need to be harnessed together. We need to be yoked together with strong relationships. So we need a recognition of each other. We need respect for each other. We need communication. We need understanding. We need synergy. And we need time. We need all this interacting together to build and to maintain. It takes the same thing to maintain good relationships as it takes to build them. God bless you in all of your relationships.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.